Thank you all very much for coming today and allowing me to present some of the results from our use of airborne hypospectral imagery to detect European corn borer infestation in corn. I see a lot of familiar faces, but let me just give you a brief bit of background. This program is part of a national multi-tiered resistance monitoring program whose objective is to detect insect resistance to BT corn as early as possible so that mitigation strategies can be implemented. Detection of European corn borer infestation in the field is a component of this program. The obvious thing is, why use remote sensing to detect European corn borer infestation? Well, we know that infestation of corn by European corn borer larvae disrupts the nutrient and water translocation in the plant, which typically leads to early plant senescence. The resulting chlorophyll catabolism in the leaves typically unmasks other pigments you don't normally see with the naked eye, such as chlorophyll B, anthocyanin, and carotenoids. Our project in Nebraska is a follow-up project that was planted simultaneously with an experiment of dryland corn we planted in Iowa. The project in Iowa consisted of two experiments, one irrigated and one non-irrigated, and the objective was to see in a semi-arid region if water regime affected hypospectral detection of plant stress caused by European corn borer feeding. Our hypotheses leading up to this were that, one, the obvious one, is that there would be a definite difference in our ability to detect corn borer infestation between the dry land and the irrigated experiments. The follow-up to that was that irrigation, the availability of water to stress plants, would negatively influence our ability to detect the stress caused by European corn borer feeding. Our experiment was analyzed using a repeated measures analysis of variance. We use a completely randomized block design, replicated five times. 2004, we had six row plots. In 2005, we made the plots larger so we'd have more pixels available to us, pure pixels from the center of the plots to analyze. European corn borer inoculations were designed to simulate the damage caused by larvae from the first and second flights. And I will be referring to these in the talk as first generation and second generation. Inoculations occurred for first generation at the V8 to V10 growth stage, and at the second generation at the reproductive R1 and R2 reproductive growth stage. In 2004, we only had two treatments. We had a control that we just left open, and we had a high rate of inoculation with neonate larvae at 50 larvae per plant. In 2005, we added two additional treatments, a low rate at 25 neonates every second plant, a medium rate at 25 neonates every plant, and then of course we had the previous year's higher rate at 50 neonates every plant. Okay, well, you're not going to get to see the plots we planted in Nebraska. This right here is the results of our statistical analysis of the inoculation effectiveness. In both 2004 and 2005 in the dryland and irrigated plots, with mean number of cavities per 10 plants on the y-axis and treatments on the x, the treatments were all significantly different from the controls. We had great inoculation rates. But before I go on, why do we use spectral vegetation indices? Spectral vegetation indices are designed to minimize variation from non-desired factors of interest while maximizing sensitivity to a factor that you wish to look at. Crop-specific spectral vegetation indices or individual wavelengths would have to be flexible enough to account for spectral variation caused by individual crop hybrids and environment and these interactions. Really briefly, this is the table of the results of the analysis of variance on which spectral vegetation indices we had that were able to successfully detect inoculations. In 2004, shockingly, we were able to detect first generation damage in almost all our spectral vegetation indices for both the dry land and the irrigated. And the second generation, we struck out with all the indices except one, the drought, the disease water stress indices that's out of Australia. The irrigated plots, we were very successful in identifying the inoculated plots. In 2005, we identified no inoculated corn borer plots in the first generation dryland plots, and we were only able to identify two of the inoculated treatments in the irrigated plots for first generation. Second generation, again, our results for the dryland plots were miserable. We were only able to do it once, but we were successfully able to identify with all our spectral vegetation indices each inoculated treatment within those plots. So looking at this over time, for first generation in 2004 in the dryland, we were able to successfully identify first generation European corn borer inoculated plots on three of the imaging dates beginning August 5th. And the irrigated plots, we were able to identify four of the imaging dates, 5th, 25th, 3rd, and 17th of September. In second generation, 2004, we were only able to identify the plots on one imaging date, and that was the 3rd of September. In the irrigated plots, we were able to begin detecting European corn borer inoculated plots beginning on our imaging dates on August 5th, and this continued up until the end of September. In 2005, we again were strictly unable to see anything in the plots, and the imagery is very striking in the dry land. You really don't see anything. The numbers just aren't there. In the irrigated plots, we were able to identify first generation inoculated plots five times on five imaging dates. In second generation dry land, similar to 2004, we were only able to see it on one imaging date in late August. In the irrigated plots, in August 23rd, 30th, 10th, and 23rd of September, it actually starts to pop out a little bit earlier, but it's really hard to tease apart from one another. So the true significance began August 23rd, but we did also see significant results August 9th. This is just to show you that our damage in our irrigated plots from 2005 on these imaging dates, beginning August 30th, you can start to see the high rate of infestation right here, and it's impossible to miss on the 10th of September. Adjacent to that is a set of plots, medium rate and our low inoculation rate, and those two were successfully distinguished from our control plots. But the real bonus from this is that it helped validate our Iowa study in the dryland system. In the Iowa study, in all instances, we were starting both first and generation larvae. Our ability to detect the inoculated plots began about 39 days after treatment. In Nebraska, thankfully, we found very similar results. In the dryland plots, we started to be able to see these inoculated plots with the camera 38 days after treatment, and in the irrigated plots, it varied from 37 to 42. So to go back to the original hypothesis and our objectives, that the hypospectral detection of European corn borer inoculated plots differs between dryland and irrigated systems, clearly that's so. We were only able to, in 1 year, in one set of dryland experiments, able to successfully identify the inoculated plots, whereas we were able to do that three or four times in the irrigated experiments. My hypothesis that the irrigation negatively influenced the detection of plant stress from European corn borer feeding is also not correct. It was disproved. Our results suggest very strongly, actually, that water deficits in the dryland plots inhibited the detection of plant stress symptoms by the sensor related to the European corn borer infestation levels that we had. But for us and for the monitoring program, as European corn borer populations are exceptionally low right now, historically low maybe, it could be a rootworm future. And for a variety of reasons, corn rootworm may actually be easier to detect with the hypospectral sensor in fields of corn than European corn borer. And on this, just to help you through this, these pink dots, which correspond with the image, which is the pigment-specific ratio for chlorophyll B, we actually found really nice agreement between heavy root feeding lodged corn and the imagery. So the structural differences within the canopy, the plant stress resulting from corn rootworm feeding, all of those are detectable with the sensor, and combined, it should enable us to have better accuracies. Thank you. I can take a question, I guess. Yeah, Steve.
Thank you. Matt, in your plots you were testing, I believe it was every plant in either a 6-row or a 12-row wide plot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that representative of infestation full size that you see from natural infestation?
No. I mean, we stacked the dice in our favor just to determine if we were able to see it under these conditions. I've got a series of simulations I'm running right now where I've taken the values from the inoculated plots and I start to put them in a 4x4 square, I start to space them out, and then I'm going to go back and see how well I'm able to run the analysis again and see how well I'm able to discriminate the rearrangement, the spatial rearrangement of the damage. So, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.